Welcome to SI's Planet Football Podcast, where each week we discuss the latest in the world of soccer. I am SI.com soccer editor Avi Krediter, joined today by SI senior writer Grant Wall, SI.com's Brian Strauss, and SI.com's Liviu Bird. Want to jump right into some U.S. Women's National Team World Cup champion talk. Grant and Liviu, let's start with you guys. You were there in Vancouver watching the U.S. women win their third World Cup championship and doing it in just unbelievable fashion. Four goals in 16 minutes. Carly Lloyd with an insane hat trick. Grant, you've covered this team for, two decades nearly. I mean, what was it like seeing this just transpire in front of you?
Well, I mean, like, I think I was a little like Abby Wambach was in the bench. She said that she, you know, wasn't sure that she was actually really living this thing, really seeing it happen before her. To have four U.S. goals in the first 16 minutes, three of them by Carly Lloyd, including the third one from midfield, it's kind of crazy even just to say that, you know, much less to witness it. And to have been in the stadium with Liviu that night was it's just something that you'll never forget. You know, if you've been following U.S. soccer for years and years, like I have, you realize how special that is, how unique it is, how this was just a coming together of athletes and occasion that we may never, ever see again. And to have it come in the World Cup final 16 years after the U.S. had last won a World Cup, it just becomes this moment in time. And so, you know, to be there for it was pretty cool. To see this U.S. team, which had struggled offensively in the earlier parts of the tournament, just become a juggernaut against the defending world champions and play so well in the last two games against the two toughest opponents they faced, Germany and Japan, it really does show you that the World Cup is a twisting narrative and can take you in so many places that you never would have expected. So yeah, to be in Vancouver that night was something unique.
It was outrageous. I mean, just watching from afar is just one of those things that just felt surreal as well. I mean, the only thing I can really compare to it is Germany-Brazil from the Men's World Cup last summer. Just seeing, you know, goal after goal, such rapid succession, and one team that is one of the world's best teams just so shell-shocked and just unable to cope, and everything just unfolding so quickly. And, you know, rarely do you see a match of that magnitude just be over so soon. And, like, granted, Japan got back within two, maybe planted the seed of doubt a little bit that, wow, this could also be the most epic collapse in sports history. But, you know, then Tobin Heath goes and scores the fifth, and that was that. Liviu, just your take there as well. I know, you know, you've been big on Morgan Bryan's presence on this team and how she was able to allow Carly Lloyd the freedom to kind of go forward and be the offensive force that she was. Just what did you see that night and really over the last couple of games?
Well, I'll tell you what, that was it was the first World Cup final that I've ever covered in person, and I think I'm spoiled now. Every one of them's gonna have to be like that, or else I'll be disappointed. It was definitely the most incredible thing I've seen in person on the soccer field. And you know, like Grant said, I mean, it's just something that you're never going to forget, sitting there in BC Place watching the U.S. score goal after goal and just really take it to Japan. It was really something to behold. You know, like you said, Morgan Bryan did play another important role again. It's hard to say that she really had much to do with the set piece goals, because those are set pieces and they're completely different, although sure, she did win the first corner for the U.S. This kind of unleashing of Carly Lloyd that we've seen, this ability to play higher up the field and to be more creative in the attack, I think it really does stem from that one change. I asked Jill Ellis about it after the game, and she said, you know, it makes sense that you ride the hot hand, and Carly had been doing so well for us that I just decided that she needed to play higher. Once Ellis saw that Morgan Bryan could do the job in defensive midfield, there was really no point in trying to keep Carly Lloyd back too deep on the field. Just let her go and let her do what she does. And you know, in a way, it's not 100% surprising she would score an outrageous goal like she did. She's always been good at taking shots from outside the penalty area and making something of them. But of course, that one was a little bit farther than most of the goals that she's scored for the U.S.
I mean, it was nuts. who does that in a World Cup final? Who tries that? Who has the gall to pull it off? And then to cap a hat trick in 16 minutes and put your team up 4-0? Like, what? I was reflecting after the game, and it was even more outrageous in the moment, you know, a few hours later than when it actually happened. It's just one of those things you'll never forget, and just a goal that'll be played on highlight reels forever. Now, Grant, last year we, you know, put out this list of the top 10 most significant goals in U.S. soccer history. We might need to make an amendment. I did some thinking about this. Curious on your thoughts. Now, naturally, this wasn't a last minute winner. But a 55-yard strike from midfield in a World Cup final to essentially be a nail in a coffin for this team trying to end a 16-year drought and to cap the run of games that she had to kind of win the golden ball. Where do you think this comes in?
Well, I'm really proud of these top 10 goals in U.S. history project that we did last year. It lives on the web. It's fun to read. It's kind of a historical document, and now we have this new piece of history, and you ask the question, but you should, where does this fit in? One thing I would say is that I think we included male and female goals for the U.S. in the same top 10 list, and maybe that's, if I could go back in time, I might separate it out and have top five male and top five women. This is the greatest goal by the U.S. women's national team ever. Just the stakes of the game, a World Cup final, the audacity of the goal, I can't believe I just saw that aspect to it. The fact that it came as the third goal of a hat trick in the first 16 minutes of a World Cup final, like it's number one on the women's side for me. And then the question becomes, where does it relate to the Paul Caligiuri goal in 1989 that qualified the U.S. for that first World Cup in 40 years and started the modern era of American soccer. And they're really two different – it's like apples and oranges almost, because you're talking about something – one goal kind of fed everything that's happened in the last 25 years of American soccer and took it to a new level. And one, Lloyd's goal is just this – remarkable event that won the U.S. Helped win the U.S. a World Cup final. So I would actually, I'm sitting here right now even just processing and thinking it through, and I know Brian Strauss is going to probably have his own take on this eventually, but I'm going to put this number one. I think this is a remarkable soccer goal that so many people saw in this country and is the result of what Caligiuri started and what those U.S. women's teams started in the mid to late 80s, leading to their first World Cup title in 91. It's a good debate to have, and it's a little tough, the men and women thing, but greatest U.S. women's goal I've ever seen, and I'm going to give it number one overall.
Interesting. I was kind of going back. My battle was kind of one or two if we're trying to compare these two things. And like you said, I mean, just the significances of each are vastly different. I think we had Landon Donovan's goal against Algeria at number two. And as remarkable as that was, as grand as that was, obviously, you know, it's a moment that any American sports fan, not just a soccer fan, anyone knows what you're talking about. All due respect, that put the U.S. in the round of 16 and then they lost. This capped the World Cup. And for me, it's definitely one or two. But I do like the idea of kind of splitting, you know, men's and women's. And I would agree that it's definitely the number one women's goal as well. Livy, what do you think?
Number one women's goal for sure. In terms of the pure I guess, skill and the goal itself. Taking, if you were to take this goal in a vacuum and none of the other circumstances matter, this is definitely the best goal in American soccer history. We add in the circumstances, I don't know, I think it only gets better. I mean, World Cup final, there is something to be said for the fact that it was her third goal and they were already up 3-0, so maybe it's, I don't know, maybe if you're down by one or if you're tied or whatever, do you take that chance? You know, this is, we could open a can of worms talking about this
forever, Carly Lloyd might. Carly Lloyd might.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. She did talk about after the game about her visualization and about, you know, hey, when I was visualizing this at home before the tournament, I would, you know, take the ball to the field, train by myself, and I envisioned scoring 4 goals in the World Cup final. It's like, all right, well, fair play to you then.
She's not disappointed.
Yeah, she did sound disappointed. She's like, man, where's the last one? No, but you know, my internal debate was, is this better than Landon Donovan's goal? Is it more significant than Landon Donovan's goal? And you know, getting into the round of 16 versus winning a World Cup final, I mean, I think Carly Lloyd's goal has to win it on that basis. And I mean, Avi will attest to this because he edits this for me every week. But my power rankings are always like in terms of numbering. I often don't know where to put things, so I'm still kind of on the fence here. But you know, it's definitely the best women's goal, and I mean, if you can compare men's and women's and all the different circumstances and everything, which is extremely difficult to do, it's probably number one overall as well.
Yeah, it's just remarkable. You know, it's funny too. She actually had a chance at a fourth, a golden chance at a fourth. She had a header that went wide.
Yeah, that's true.
Of the post. I can't believe that. Who says they're going to score 4 goals in a World Cup final and then basically almost does?
You know, it's one thing to dream about it because as little kids, you know, you do the thing in the backyard where you're shooting on the hoop and you're commentating, oh, 3 seconds to go, 3-2-1, and then as the buzzer goes, you nail a 3-pointer to win the NBA championship. And everybody, I think, fantasizes about those kind of things. But to have it actually come true and or almost come true, I guess, 3/4 of the way true, that's something.
Yeah, and Grant, you had a quote from Sunil Gulati in your post game piece on Planet Football that he said it was up there. I don't know the exact wording. You can totally correct me on this, but basically one of the greatest, if not the greatest, World Cup final performance, man or woman, and it's hard to argue with that, right?
Oh yeah, I mean, it's only the second time male or female has had a hat trick in a World Cup final. Jeff Hurst had one in 1966 for England. You know, he didn't have a goal from the halfway line. I mean, it gets a little apples to oranges with all the comparisons sometimes, but it's just, it's something that I think will even grow with time. You know, it's so hard in the moment sometimes to grasp, you know, the history and all of that. But now to, you know, as the days go by and as we see these videos over time, the legend will grow of this game. And 5-2 in a World Cup final. I mean, how many good World Cup final games have we seen, men's or women's, in the last 20, 30 years? Not many, and certainly not a lot of goals. I was just talking before the game with Ari Hengst, my partner at Fox, about how, you know, there hadn't been many good World Cup final games in recent history, or ones that we remember for a lot of goals or entertainment. And we were hoping this would be one of them. And I felt conservative after this game, having predicted 3-1 USA. When I first put that out there, I was like, wow, I'm really, you know, going out on a limb here with the amount of goals. And this was like, I think it was the most goals in a World Cup final, male or female, ever, tied with the 58 final, Brazil 5, Sweden 2. Same score. And, you know, that game is remembered for the emergence of Pelé, this teenager. And this game will be remembered for Carly Lloyd. And, you know, the fact that so many Americans were watching this was the biggest television audience in U.S. history for a soccer game, male or female. And that's the thing, is legends do things when the stakes are highest, legends do things when there are the most eyeballs on a game. And so that's, you know, Carly Lloyd has earned her place in history with this game. She could retire tomorrow, and this will probably be the high point and what she's remembered for. And that's got to be a cool feeling.
For sure. And I think the ticket sales people with the Houston Dash hope that she does not retire tomorrow necessarily. But yeah, hey, look, I'm the moron who essentially predicted a scoreless draw going to PKs. So it's safe to say nobody saw this coming, at least of this magnitude. And it's just one of those finals that World Cup runs, really, that we'll remember forever. And like you've written, you know, this team kind of created their own legacy now. You know, they're out of the shadow of the 99ers who, you know, take nothing away from them. Their era, their team was phenomenal, and now they've got some company, and that's a good thing. Let's spin it forward with this team a little bit now, because that's what we do, right? We never live in the moment. We never just soak in what happened. We get Olympics next summer, and then obviously France 2019 in 4 years. A lot of questions facing this team. There are a lot of the key components getting older. Abby Wambach, of course, Christina Rampone, 40, and what a sight it was to watch them lift the trophy together. I thought that was one of the cooler things that happened the other night. Do you see Abby Wambach playing for the U.S. national team next summer, Grant?
I would doubt it. I don't think there's anything 100% at this point. It was interesting in the mix zone after the game, Alex Morgan said that she sat down with Abby Wambach in the locker room for a couple minutes after the game, and they had just kind of a one-on-one conversation, and Morgan said she was tearing up asking Wambach, is this the last time I've played with you? And according to Morgan, Wambach's response was, well, you're not quite rid of me yet. There's at least a couple more months. So I'm thinking the victory tour that is coming, the 10-game series of friendlies around the U.S. that is part of the player's contract with U.S. soccer, you know, that's likely to be Wambach's swan song. You know, Wambach herself didn't want to make any announcements after the game, but I have just knowing what I know, I doubt she'll be part of the Olympic effort. There's only 18 players in the Olympics per team, as opposed to 23 for this tournament, the World Cup. And you know, Wambach decided not to play club soccer before this tournament, and you know, she had told me in my cover story before the World Cup, but you know, she's in a different place now in her life, where family is really important to her. Wanting to have kids is important to her. So I want to say never about the Olympics, but I think if I'm leaning one way, I think Wambach is going to stop playing for the national team after this victory tour.
And, you know, it makes sense too, right? Go out on top with the World Cup. Oh, yeah. and then, you know, take an extended victory lap and a deserved one at that. And like you said, with 18 players, that you don't want to be in a position where you're not going out on your own terms, because if she makes herself available for the Olympics and then doesn't get picked, that's a pretty terrible way to go out. So it's, yeah, I think sensibly that adds up. And Graham, what do you make of Jill Ellis now? Because she was brought in to do a job. The job was done, but it was also done under just heavy scrutiny and criticism, and she eventually got it right and now is getting a lot of praise, rightfully so. Is she a long-term coach for this group?
I think she's going to coach through the Olympics. She certainly won the right to do that by winning this tournament. You know, I think this is all part of the process of how it works in a soccer country. She took the job a year before the World Cup, tough circumstances, but knew what she was accepting too. And she said this over and over again, that a lot of scrutiny comes with being the U.S. women's national team coach. This is like being the Brazil men's coach, and there's only one acceptable result. That's winning the World Cup. And if the team doesn't look like it's going to do that, and there's things to criticize, that coach is going to get criticized, and that's all part of it. And I think Jill Ellis is mature enough, and she gets it. Now, it is a process, and I think it's a good reminder that just because the U.S. was pretty anemic in the attack in the first couple games of this World Cup doesn't mean that it won't go to a different place. And tactically, Jill Ellis deserves a lot of credit for making the decision, one, to bench Abby Wambach in the middle of the tournament, the greatest scorer in the history of the game internationally, and essentially replace her with Morgan Bryan, the youngest player on the team, 22 years old, who hasn't played against the really top teams in the world at this kind of defensive midfielder position, and to change the tactical approach to have three central midfielders, which really only happened from the start in the last two games of this tournament. But those were the two best attacking games for the U.S. when Carly Lloyd ran rampant. And so that decision, it's one thing to play Morgan Bryan against China, a lesser team, when you have to because Lauren Holliday is suspended on yellow cards. But it's quite another to decide I'm going to play Morgan Bryan and keep Wambach on the bench against Germany and Japan. So Jill Ellis deserves a ton of credit now, and this is – this is the way sports works. So enjoy it, Jill Ellis. You deserve it. You had a lot of guts, and congratulations. We'll see you at the Olympics.
Okay. And you look at now Bryan. She's part of the youth foundation that there is on this team, as many aging players as there are and players who have been around for a while. There are, you know, a good handful of younger 20s. Older 20s, I guess, who you would expect to see for the next 4 years in the build up to France. Liv, I guess, who do you see as kind of like the rest of that foundation, and, you know, trying to spin it ahead as much as we can? I mean, do you see a bulk of these players kind of coming back in France?
You know, it's, I think it is time for kind of a changing of the guard, so to speak. This, you know, if you look at the two players who had, I think, the biggest impact on the way that the team played throughout the tournament, obviously Carly Lloyd was fantastic. She did what she did, and she's not going anywhere. But, you know, you look at Julie Johnston throughout the group stage. She had a couple of rougher performances in the knockout round, scoring the own goal against Japan, giving up the penalty against Germany. But overall, I thought she was very good. One of the younger players on the team. And then, of course, Morgan Bryan, who, you know, I wrote that column saying basically she's the reason the U.S. won the World Cup. And I, you know, I didn't exactly put it that way, but I honestly, that's kind of the way I feel. And, you know, I will temper a little bit the praise on Jill Ellis, just because of the fact that it felt like she kind of fell backward into this solution. Like, with Lauren Holliday's suspension, it felt a little bit like she didn't really have a choice but to play Morgan Bryan in central midfield, because even before that she was getting more time on the wing or just in relief spells in central midfield, and it she wasn't playing her normal position, and so it feels like a little bit she got a little bit lucky. But again, you create your own luck. You need luck to win these things, and you know, credit to her for once it happened, for recognizing what was going on. And for seeing that, hey, she needs to be on the field. Maybe Abby Wambach would do better off the bench. So she does deserve credit for that. You know, spinning it forward, I think Bryan and Johnston have to be kind of the foundation for this team, based on their experience at the World Cup, and then moving forward into the Olympics. I think, you know, if we're looking at other younger players, because the U.S. actually didn't even have a player who was eligible for the Young Player Award at this tournament, which is it's astounding. But you know, Crystal Dunn, she's 23. I think she should have been on this squad, and she's been having a spectacular NWSL season while the team is at the World Cup. And so I think she deserves another look. You know, there's other players who are kind of flying under the radar. I've thought for a while that Kalia Ojai, who also plays for Houston, should be in the picture. There's a couple of other players like that who I hope will kind of rise to it now that the U.S. is kind of in this transition moment a little bit. The biggest question mark for me, and I don't even have an answer for this, and I don't think you can have an exact replacement for this, but when Hope Solo retires from the international game, whether it's after this World Cup, whether it's after the Olympics, whether it's after the next World Cup or whenever, I mean, who do you replace her with? How can you replace the best goalkeeper in the world who has been playing so many games for the U.S., hasn't really had, an heir apparent even in the U.S. system? And that's going to be a key component that whoever's tasked with finding the next Hope Solo, or, you know, her replacement at least, because I don't know if you can find the next Hope Solo, that's going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah, for sure. A lot of questions for the future. Now let's not forget as well that, you know, Sydney Leroux, Alex Morgan, you know, there are attacking talents and,
oh yeah,
you know, in place, and, you know, they're not going anywhere. And it's crazy to me that Leroux didn't score in this World Cup. Alex Morgan scored once. Abby Wambach scored once. Kristen Press scored once, who's another younger player, or, you know, comparatively. And while they didn't necessarily score in volume, those three goals were all game winners. So it's, you know, the forwards, while they might not have had the breakout massive tournament, I think, that we all expected. I think we all expected Alex Morgan would be in the Golden Boot race. I think we expected Abby Wambach would score a couple. They still made an impact. They still put pressure on defenses. They opened things up. Look, what can you say? You know,
I look at it moving forward here, and I kind of doubt that Wambach, Christy Rampone, Shannon Box, all on this team, I doubt they will be involved in the Olympics due to the number situation, due to the fact that you do need to get more young players involved. You know, to get a Crystal Dunn involved, to get an Ojai involved. The two youngest players on the U.S. team, Johnston and Bryan, were two of the most important players in this World Cup run. It's kind of screwy, the scheduling, the calendar of women's soccer, that the big major world events are in consecutive years, and then you have 2 years where you don't have one. And so I look at who might stick around, who might not. Players that are in their 30s, early 30s, Hope Solo, Carly Lloyd, I think they'll definitely stick around for the Olympics. I think the question becomes, what do they do after that? Those two players in particular they're soccer players. They have no desire to retire anytime soon. They're playing at a very high level. So my guess is I could see those guys, you know, going through the next World Cup.
Interesting. Interesting indeed. Also another in that 30 crowd, Megan Rapinoe, Becky Sauer Run, who are both vital to the U.S. success, especially early on, Rapinoe, and then Sauerbrunn, just her consistency across the board in the back.
Another name I just want to throw out there before we go too far away from this is Lindsay Horan, who's been playing for PSG. She signed her professional contract with them when she was, I believe, 18, was it? She decided not to play college soccer and just go over and play for PSG in the French league. And, as of right now, 49 appearances, 40 goals for PSG in the Ligue 1. And, she's only 21 years old. Somebody who, it's kind of interesting that for the U.S. national team, if you want to be called in, you kind of have to be playing in the U.S. And these players, we've seen players who have come back from Europe who maybe started to get looks while they were in Europe, but when they came back over, you know, thinking Megan Klingenberg, Kristen Press, Whitney Engen, when they came back over to the NWSL, that was when they really seriously started to get looks from the national team. I think that's interesting and maybe something that needs to be broken a little bit, something that the U.S. needs to be trying to reach these players who are playing abroad. Got a few players in the French league with American passports, you know, a few players in Germany who could make a difference for the national team. And I think it's time to maybe expand that search perimeter a little bit.
Well, we will definitely see what the future holds. But hey, whatever worked for getting this 23-player crew together definitely did the job. So congratulations to the U.S. women on a memorable run, a third World Cup championship, and something that gave us a pretty good summer, pretty enjoyable to watch, to cover. I'm sure you guys had a blast being out in Vancouver and in Canada, Grant, for the last 6 weeks. So thank you guys also. That'll put a bow on that. The U.S. women return to action in August. Got a couple of friendlies against Costa Rica. Big ticket sales already for that. I think one of those sold out in like a day. So the fever is there. So, you know, check out these players, check them out at their NWSL teams in your cities. And look, they played a great brand of soccer over the last, well, definitely the last couple of games, and overall did the job in Canada to win it all. And with that, we're going to bring in Brian Strauss. He is on the road with the U.S. men's national team as they attempt to win their second straight Gold Cup and clinch a place in the 2017 FIFA Confederations Cup. Brian, welcome.
Hi, Avi. I think I'm in Massachusetts.
It's been a whirlwind of a few days. You started down in Frisco, Texas. Beautiful Frisco. And here you are in Foxborough. It's my stomping grounds right there. I grew up.
That's
next
right.
Town
now
over.
Frisco, that whole area really has some of the nicest access roads and on ramps that I've seen. It's lovely. I'm not even in Foxborough. Like, I think technically I'm in, but really I'm just kind of in the woods at a comfort inn.
Hey,
but it's nice.
Like I said, be careful. That's my hometown. You could be talking about. So I was just talking with Gretton Liviu about the Women's World Cup, obviously.
Did they have fun?
They did have fun. They had a blast. Obviously, how could you not, watching that last game, one for the storybooks. And one way to kind of tie in Gold Cup and Women's World Cup, we're talking about our top 10 goals in U.S. soccer history. Benny Failhaber's Gold Cup goal, the one that won the 2007 Gold Cup against Mexico, that ridiculous volley. That's on our list.
I was honored to get to write that one. That whole project was amazing. I mean, I'm still proud of that. But to get to do Benny's goal was a treat.
Yeah, that goal was awesome. And before we go on to talk about the men's team now and the Gold Cup, kind of want to get your take on where Lloyd's goal stands. I know it's just cool conversation fodder at this point.
Well, I was thinking about that, actually. I was thinking about our list because we did it right before the World Cup last year. And then I was thinking about it again when Brooks scored against Ghana. And mm-hmm. I started thinking about, wow, with the winning goal against Ghana, the World Cup nemesis, the goal that got the U.S. into the knockout stage, that really cemented Klinsmann's tenure and extension with the national team. How big was that goal? Would that goal have made it onto the top 10 list? And now here we are again. Maybe we should just resurrect this thing every few years. Now here we are with Carly Lloyd.
That's a good. I didn't even think about Brooks's goal, but yeah, you're 100% right. Yeah, it's just a cool project, and it's cool to just kind of take these great moments in U.S. soccer history and kind of put them in their place. Do you see Lloyd's goal up with the Caligiuri and the Donovan where we had in 1 and 2? Do you find it just because it wasn't the game winner necessarily that it isn't as significant?
It certainly was spectacular. I mean, if we did a list of top 10 spectacular U.S. goals, it's high on the list. But yeah, it wasn't the winning goal. It certainly was the I don't even know if it was the backbreaker. I mean, you know, the third goal was probably the backbreaker. I think it was the second most significant goal in U.S. women's soccer history. I still don't see how it passes Michelle Akers in overtime of the first Women's World Cup final, the goal that won them the first tournament, the goal that allowed this entire program to set a championship tone that has now lasted for how long has it been? 25 years. So to me, that's still going to be a game winner in the first Women's World Cup final. It is still going to be the biggest goal in the history of that program. And I think, where did we have that at 4 on our list? So yeah. So then I would put Carly Lloyd's goal at 5 or 6.
Interesting. Definitely a different take than what all of us
have. I assume. I assume I'll have an inbox full of hate mail as soon as this thing hits iTunes.
I mean,
we're talking about significance and it was awesome. And here's the other thing is we've all, after 99, after a couple of the Olympics, we've all sort of waited for this breakthrough for women's soccer below the national team level. When is the success, you know, when is the engine of the women's national team going to start to bring people out to NWSL games and things of that nature? So I think part of the story of that goal maybe hasn't been written yet. If this team is really like Donovan's goal, you know, that was the thing for me about Donovan's goal against Algeria is that, you know, like I wrote, you know, soccer hit the mainstream at that moment. That was a big moment for the sport in this country. And I don't know yet if we know whether or not Carly Lloyd's goal is going to really bring women's soccer overall to a different level in between World Cups, or if it's now after the hype going to sort of settle back to where it was. So maybe in a couple of years, maybe my opinion of it'll change.
Interesting. That's a fair point, I think. And we'll see. Initial ticket sales from NWSL teams are are apparently up, which awesome. which is good. Yeah, whether those players actually play this weekend is another story altogether.
I should get up to Germantown one of these days and see the Spirit. I'm guilty too. I have yet to make, what is it, to 45 minute to an hour drive. I have yet to do it, and I should.
I love that complex. It's a great place. All right. Anyway, let's spin it back now to the men. You're with them. Down in Texas. They beat Honduras 2-1. It's a win. Like with any group stage, style points don't really matter all that much. 3 points count way more. What was your takeaway from that opening game? And are there kind of red flags you see with this team, or it's, you know, it's a good win over a quality opponent?
Yeah, more of the latter. I think, I don't know, not a red flag, maybe a pink flag. you know, they certainly thought they were going to have more of the ball. And you know, talking to the guys before the game, they expected the challenge in that game to be Honduras is going to be really well organized. Pinto's got them playing five in the back. You know, how are we going to find space and seam and figure out a way to move those guys in order to get the chances we need to win the game? That was how they were going in. And of course, the challenge, that wasn't the challenge. The challenge turned out to be holding on for dear life. Honduras had more of the ball. They were better with the ball in the offensive half than the U.S. Their pressure really kind of got the U.S. midfield a little bit discombobulated. So rather than passing it around and trying to figure out how to break through, they were simply trying to hold on to the ball. And so it was challenging. They expected it to be a challenge. The challenge just turned out to be a little bit different than they expected. So, you know, and they know that. And we talked to them after the game, and we were down at training this morning, talked to them again, and they all acknowledged, you know, we got to be a bit sharper on the ball. We have to be, you know, Kyle Beckerman made an interesting point, you know, talking about, you know, you see a little bit of space to move when you cross midfield. You know, do you go? Do you try to hit that space as quickly as you can and maybe take advantage of an opportunity? Or do you say to yourself, you know, we're better served moving the ball around a little bit and getting some touches and getting some rhythm and giving the rest of the team time to move into the attack and give a bit more support off the ball and things like that? And he said it's about making better choices, you know, during the course of a match. And so, you know, they all said, we'll watch the video. We'll figure it out. These games come really quickly. The Gold Cup is really compressed. And certainly Honduras is probably the toughest team in their group. So they got through that, and they're in good shape, and they'll build during the course of this tournament, just like the women did. I mean, everyone was in hysterics after the first couple games that the women's national team played in Canada, and look how they finished up. So I think the men are going to be looking to do something similar.
Exactly. You don't, you know, it's nice if they win 6-0 and look like the best team in the world, but then if there's not improvement on that, then what does that mean? It's the first game of the group stage. So
yeah, and Klinsmann has options. I mean, guys, yeah. You know, you want to hold the ball a bit more. I mean, maybe Mix Diskerud is an option. You know, we're all sort of wondering how Ali Bedoya is doing and coming back from his knee situation. Aaron Johansson didn't play the other night. You've got guys like Omar Gonzalez and Tim Ream who can bring a little bit more experience in back. So there, you know, it's not like Klinsmann has exhausted all of his options here and there's plenty to look at going into the next two group stage games.
Of course. And I feel like the Gold Cup, like Copa America too, it's a slugfest in a lot of ways, and you need to have depth. Their yellow cards will happen, injuries might happen. And the way that these games kind of play, they're never a work of art, right? It's very rarely a beautiful, stylish game in these CONCACAF games. So it's, you know, in a lot of ways, it's a matter of
these teams. The Gold Cup is, I mean, Copa America is every four. I mean, obviously, the CONMEBOL is only 10 teams. So they're used to playing each other. They play each other twice in qualifying, and then in the Copa America. But that's Copa America is now every 4 years. The Gold Cup's every 2 years. Plus, you've got to play what? I mean, the U.S. coming in the semifinal stage in Mexico. Those teams still have to play 16 matches to qualify for the World Cup, which is among the highest in the world. They're all playing each other. These teams play each other all the time. And so in any sport, college sports, you know, hockey, the NHL, whatever, I mean, teams that play each other over and over and over again, things just get kind of gritty and nasty and it, you know, the game decays a little bit because of familiarity and because of a little bit of extra. I mean, there were some hard fouls the other night in Frisco, and I think that's part of it as well. You know, it's just familiarity breeds contempt. And I don't know that there are any national teams in the world as familiar with each other as, you know, the top 7-8 teams in CONCACAF. They play each other all the time.
Yeah, that's a good point. Also, too, you can comment on this better than I can. The weather conditions down in Texas, it seemed like it was more San Pedro Sula than it was USA.
We joked about that. Yeah. No, even standing in the mix zone after the game, like, we, you know, the players had showered and were coming out, and we were all a mess. So we were, Beckerman was laughing at us for kind of looking terrible. It was really hot. And so when you see, you know, Altidore, who's trying to work his way back from a hamstring issue, when you see him come out on the hour, when you see Andy Nahar, probably much to the Americans' delight, come out after the hour,
yeah.
It was soupy and gross, and that absolutely played a role. So I think I'm sure a lot of the guys are happy to be up here in the woods to play in some cooler temperatures against Haiti.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, a lot of players did not really get the chance to play in that opening game, and that bodes well going forward. Haiti the second game, then Panama, and then on to the knockout round. Real quick before we kind of tie this all together, hardest game out of the way, do you see the U.S. getting tripped up at all? I mean, Panama, obviously that's a final rematch from 2 years ago, but it seems rather straightforward, and in my opinion, they might not win 3-0, but it seems like it's kind of all there for the taking.
Yeah, what matters the most, obviously, is that they finish first or second so I can go to Baltimore for the quarterfinal instead of driving home from the Meadowlands overnight to catch a flight to Atlanta early the next morning. They'll be fine. Panama was not sharp the other night. Worst case scenario, maybe, you know, Jurgen decides to give a couple guys a rest and you know, maybe that game, I could see a, you know, a permutation where that game's a draw. But no, I mean, the U.S. will win the group. And as I said, over the course of, you know, this tournament in the four games leading up to the semifinal, that's Jurgen's chance to really find the combinations and some of the chemistry that's going to work. And he was not making excuses when he said this team had only been training together a week, including the Guatemala friendly. I mean, it's, you know, you got guys coming off seasons in Europe and Mexico, MLS guys integrating them. Brad Guzan made an interesting point the other night. We were asking him about just sort of the chemistry and back between Alvarado and Brooks and Timmy Chandler. And he said, look, these guys they play on different continents, you know, and so trying to integrate them and make everything seamless in only a week is not going to be easy. And I honestly don't think that that's excuses. I mean, it's something they're going to fight through. And the real issue, like with the women, the real issue is to be hitting your stride when you get to the semi.
Exactly. It's all about building and kind of getting to be at your best before the Costa Rica games, the Mexico games, the games that we all expect to see in the later stages of this tournament.
And you have the six changes, there are six roster changes you're able to make after the group stage. So, you know, Jurgen can call in Carly Lloyd.
that would be unprecedented. It also might not be a bad move. The form that she's in right now, go straight from the parade in New York City down to the final game in Kansas City. Cool. Well, thanks for joining us from the road. I know you got a lot of work to be done, and we'll be sure to read all of it on Planet Football.
Yeah, thanks to everyone who didn't stop the podcast after the Women's World Cup talk.
You got it. And thank all of you for listening once again. We'll have more Gold Cup talk next week for sure, and probably some more U.S. Women's talk too, riding out this victory wave. So thanks again to Grant Wall, Livy Bird, and Brian Strauss. I'm Avi Krediter. We'll talk to you next week.
About the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.